The topics discussed here tonight are general in nature, and you should seek personal advice before acting on any of this information. And now, the bottom line. Thanks to IT Financial Services. High quality financial planning. Visit itfs.com.au.
Yes, the A-team have come in this morning. Oh, we've got the A-team here. Philip Tafe and Paul Larkin back together. How are you?
Going well.
Well, thanks, Michael.
Nice to see you both. Mm. And I understand last week in my absence it was a very busy program.
It was busy for me. I think Paul was sunning himself in Hawaii.
Yeah, so I was not present.
No, right, okay.
So I missed out on all these calls. Well, yeah.
One of us is the reason people don't call. I'm not sure.
That's right.
You or me. So 131873 is the number if you've got any questions about your personal finances. Now is the hour to do that. 131873. You got two of the best in the business here, Philip Tafe and Paul Larkin from IT Financial Services. They will help you free of charge in this next hour, and I can tell you that's a rare event for these two, so take advantage of it while you can. Their Porsches look beautiful down in the car park. No, only joking.
We wish.
Only
we
joking.
Wish.
Only joking. Last week, it really was the concern questions seeking information about changes to the pensions assets test. Of course, the thresholds around that all tweak from January the 1st, don't they?
Mm. That's correct.
And there's a lot of uncertainty.
Huge uncertainty, because it's not just around the technicalities of where the upper thresholds are, what they're reducing to in terms of how many assets you can have before you lose the age pension. It's, okay, even when you work that out, there's going to be some kind of shortfall for a lot of people in terms of what they're spending now. And how do you come up with that shortfall? What does that mean? How quickly are you going to eat into your own assets? Mm. And, how do you survive beyond 1 January?
Yeah, it's a big issue. I mean, there's people who are part pensioners who, for couples, for example, homeowners, that the cap's now reducing to 816,000, I think it is. And so people, the current cap's about $1.2 million. So
it is a difference, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a couple hundred thousand dollars involved there, but obviously with the threshold coming down, a lot of people are going to lose their part pension completely. And yeah, like Phil said, I mean, factoring in that loss of income, that's a big issue for a lot of people. So where are we going to strum up that additional money from? You either need your current investments to work harder for you, be that your superannuation or the rental income from a property. But the other thing is the benefits that the age pension entitlement gives you. So the discounts on the rates and your free registration and all these things.
Is all of that affected by this change?
Yeah, the key point is if you go off the age pension completely, I think they're going to transfer you onto the Commonwealth Seniors Health Card.
Yeah.
So you still get the benefit of the pharmaceutical benefit scheme and discounted medicals and things like that.
Yes.
But you would lose all the major benefits of that pensioner card, which would be discounted rates, car registration, telephone bills.
So there's a cumulative effect here. Negative cumulative effect.
Yeah, that's right.
It's not just that fortnightly payment that's impacted. However, people that still remain on the age pension, even at a reduced rate, they then keep all those ancillary benefits that come with the card.
So you only need a dollar of age pension to still get those benefits. So trying to maintain that dollar or the $5 or the $100 a fortnight, it's going to continue to get you those benefits.
You mentioned there, Paul, that issue of just having the $1 to access that goldmine of benefits that come. Well, deserved benefits, of course. I assume people will be thinking, well, you know, this change, I'm going to be very close, within a couple of thousand, let's say a couple of ten thousands, to either getting it or not. Mm. Do I see my financial advisor and work my personal financial situation such that I just qualify still to get all of that, or do I just sit tight, keep the format I've got
That's
the principle.
No, that's a very good point. And the short answer would be to certainly review your situation with your advisor and look at, I mean, there are ways to actually reduce your assets legally, if you like.
And there's one point of clarification from last week, actually, where we were talking about burial plots. Mm. And a listener called in and said, well, they asked the question, is there some exemption? And on air, I wasn't quite sure. And we looked into it during the week. And yes, there is an exemption for money spent on a burial plot. So, if you're planning that kind of thing, if you're planning a home renovation, if you're planning on spending some money on something anyway, it may be worthwhile bringing that forward.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting.
Planning your death's not a great thing.
No.
But the funeral plot and the funeral plan does reduce your assets threshold or your asset value. So I think it's up to 12,500 the maximum.
Well, that's for a funeral bond, but a burial plot doesn't have that same cap or exemption, and that was the question last week.
It's incredible all the different details and caveats.
But the other important one there is the gifting rules. So you can give money away to your kids or anyone you like, but the maximum is $10,000 per year or $30,000 over a 5-year period. So if you it's too late now to be, you can certainly do $10,000 now leading up to 1 January 2017.
Well, that might be the difference between getting all of this or not.
That's right.
All right, well, obviously a lot of questions still lingering. 131873 if you'd like some of those answered. 131873, finance in the first hour on this Tuesday morning. G'day, Andrew.
Yeah, g'day, guys. I've just got a query in regards to, I'm currently going through a separation. I'm just inquiring about how superannuation might be split in the case of divorce.
Mm-hmm.
I've been working for 20 years and, I've been married for 20 years. I've been working longer than that, and both of us have been employed the whole time through that marriage. So I was just wondering how superannuation is generally split up.
Andrew, you can definitely split super, and a court will take it into consideration when looking at your assets. So a court can make a ruling where, or I guess you could come to some agreement as well and have that implemented by the super funds to say, yes, as part of this equitable agreement, a certain amount is to be split from one spouse to the other.
Mm.
You may not feel it's equitable, but the courts might rule it that way.
Okay. Yeah, it's just the, our kids are both grown up and left home, so they're no longer a factor.
Yeah, right.
The thing to factor in with a lot of this as well is that people often don't look at what the tax implications are of which assets they end up inheriting. So, somebody might inherit, one partner may inherit some shares and the other balances out with a bit of super, and yet those two things are taxed completely differently. So if you're really going through that exercise properly, you'd want to make sure that the after-tax benefit is actually equalised, not just the pre-tax value.
Right.
And the same goes with, particularly with investment properties, because you inherit something that you think's worth $1 million, but if it was sold, you could lose a big chunk of that in tax.
That's all quite good. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, the advice would be talk to your solicitor as part of the process because it definitely comes into it.
Sounds like it. Thank you, Andrew. 131873. Hello, Andre.
Yes, hello. Look, just what I'm inquiring about. Bruce has 100, and I think it's $148,000 invested.
Who's this, sorry?
Bruce, a friend of mine.
Right.
Who I'm inquiring about, and we have half an investment property together, which is valued at $260,000. But what he was worried about is his house is worth $1,000,001. Will this affect him?
No, Andre, the home is actually still not included as an asset for the assets test. So the value of the home could be $2, $3, $4, $5 million, and it's not actually included for Bruce's entitlement if he's an age pension recipient. So the investment property, the half ownership definitely will be, and the $148,000 you mentioned will be included for asset values for him, but certainly not the home or his main residence.
I was going to say, he'll actually be better off under the new rules because if he's treated as a single homeowner at present, to get the full age pension, you can have around $200,000 in assets, a little over. Whereas from 1 January, that lower threshold's increasing up to $250,000. So that's, his assets aren't that far above that threshold. So he'll actually get more age pension from 1 January.
All right, Andre, hope that helps. Thank you for that. 131873 is the open line number. G'day, Ron.
I'm a blind pensioner, and the pension's not means tested at the moment. Is that going to be affected?
No, Ron, look, that's still going to be the case. You're not going to be means tested. There's no changes there to
changes.
Yeah, the way they do that.
Okay, good, thanks.
You'll be right.
Thanks a lot.
Pleasure.
You're welcome.
Yeah, well, that's often a question that's raised, isn't it, particularly around the blind pension?
Yep. But no, there's no changes there. So
they've brought in some reasonableness to the whole process.
Just on the other issue with the change in the assets threshold, they're actually they're increasing the reduction rate over the lower threshold. So Phil was mentioning it is going up to $250,000 for a single pensioner, But once you're over that limit, for every $1,000, the current reduction in your entitlement is $1.50 per fortnight, but it's actually going up to $3 per $1,000 over. So your actual reduction will be, well, doubled, if you like, once you're over the low threshold.
I guess the reverse of that is, for every $1,000 that you spend, you're going to get an extra $3.50.
Yeah, that's
$3
right.
A fortnight age pension instead of $1.50. So I guess that's the game the government's playing. Take away some of what you're getting now. Then when you sneak under these lower thresholds, you'll start getting the payments back at an increased rate.
Mm.
I guess buy now, pay later.
So some people, as we said, are better off.
Mm. That's right, yeah.
People with lower amounts of assets, better off. People with higher amounts, far worse off.
So this is being seen as an equities kind of thing, that those who need it in the true sense of welfare are getting it, and those who don't, because they, for the short term anyway, can supply themselves, won't.
And I think we made the point last week that these changes are really bringing things back to where they were prior to 2007, which was the point where these asset thresholds were basically doubled back in the Howard government days. So I guess the frustrating thing is that the rules keep changing. You know, just give us a game plan that we can work to, so we know how to plan our retirements rather than flipping it up and down all the time.
We'd like the super itself.
Yeah, exactly like super. All right. 131873 if you have a question. G'day, Luke.
Hey, how you going, mate?
Well, thank you.
I'm with superannuation. I combined all my superannuation, and I'm with, what's it called? The acronym is LUCRF Super.
Yep.
And I had like four or five different superannuations prior to that. I'm 35 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I found through the ATO that I could just combine it all, and I chose one certain superannuation to like have the one thing going. So
Do you have a question, or are you telling us this, Luke?
Oh, no, yeah, I'm telling you now, but I have a question as to, I mean, like, I'm a single person. I don't have dependents. I don't have anything. And I've got apparently like a $144,000 like death benefit. I've got permanent disability as to the same number.
Right, yeah.
Is
your question, should you have that insurance? Is that worthwhile, Luke? Was that your
question? Well, it doesn't come out of, like, I don't pay for it. It just comes out of what I work for, because I work part-time in a full-time university. I'm in my last year of studying a psychology degree, so, yeah.
Right,
well,
okay.
Without getting more of the life story, as interesting as this, let's assume that is the question.
Yeah,
is it worth his while?
Well, it raises a whole lot of things for me. I mean, yes, what he's done is great. You get your super all together, but it absolutely raises these questions about, but what happened to the insurance policies attached to those four other funds?
Mm.
You know, maybe the insurance on one of those other funds was more cost effective or a better policy than the one he ended up going to, and he didn't bother checking that. Where he said he's not paying for it, well, he is.
Yes.
It's coming out of his super fund.
Mm.
He probably doesn't care, because he's 35 and isn't going to see the money till he's 60 at least. But he's absolutely paying for it. Does he need it, at being a single person with no commitments?
At this point, probably no.
The life insurance component, no. But the problem is, he probably does need total and permanent disability insurance, because what happens if he's disabled? He's either going to be a burden on his family or go on to government support, which would just be a fortnight to fortnightly payment, whereas the total and permanent disability insurance is a lump sum that would see him get through that in some way. And then the catch is, with life and TPD insurance attached in a super fund, is that you normally can't have TPD without an equivalent level of life insurance attached. So you end up paying for both, even though you only want one. So the short answer to Luke is, yeah, you probably do need both, and he probably needs to sit down with somebody and work out, well, how much does he actually need? If he was disabled, is $140,000 enough? And I would argue, if you're 35, it's actually bare bones.
But what he did, which I think was smart, is to combine those five different funds into one.
Yeah. But like Phil said, he may have had one of those super funds with a greater amount of life and TPD insurance, and it may have been at a reduced cost to what he's currently paying. And that's an important thing, is to, when you're amalgamating super funds, is to look at what your current insurance arrangements are in any of the existing funds, because quite often, look, with what we call group insurance, like a lot of people when they start a job with an employer, the employer will provide you know, a standard superannuation fund, and because of the company itself, it'll get a group discount on insurance premiums. So employees will get this automatic insurance cover, and that can continue, you know, right through their employment period. And then if they roll those funds over to another fund, well, that's the issue. They need to review those insurance arrangements, and quite often it can be worthwhile to maintain them.
So I was also going to say, also don't just trust what's printed on your statement in relation to the level of cover that you have. Because when you sign up with an employer, it'll often say, look, by default, you're given X amount.
200,000 or something.
And yet we've seen horror stories in the office where people have thought they've had that cover, gone to make a claim, and then they're told, actually, no. Because if you read the fine print, you know, you weren't in the office on that first day, therefore you're not actually covered, or there was a change along the way and you weren't eligible for that increase that we told you that you had and we charged you for, but we're not going to pay you come claim time.
Mm.
So that's the real advantage of doing your homework up front, probably going to the hassle of actually applying with an insurance company, getting them to check you out, do all the medical tests and the financial tests, and knowing up front what you're covered for, as opposed to one of these policies that's just almost gifted to you, but without any due diligence done up front.
Mm.
Okay, 131873. Thank you, Luke. 131873. We'll take a break and be back with more in just a moment. Any of your personal finance questions, doesn't have to be about their pension, of course, although getting a bit of a run on that this morning, can be about super, properties, investment, whatever. 131873. Good to have you with us. We've got financial advice in this first hour of Tuesday morning. 131873 is the open line number. If you have any questions for Philip or Paul from IT Financial Services, gents, Michael's on the phone. Hi, Michael.
Yes, good evening.
Yes.
Can I ask the first question? What is the full pension for a single man?
Yep. So, Michael, I think it's Phil's got his...
I think it's about $873 or $4 a fortnight.
Which includes all those supplements, is that right, Phil?
No, I think the supplements are on top. Oh, no, sorry, that includes the energy supplement and the pension supplement.
So what was that, $800 and what?
$874 a fortnight, roughly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, sorry, and the next question is, how much am I... I have no other assets but my super. How much are... am I allowed to have in the super before it affects my pension?
And do you own your own home?
No. Nothing else.
Okay. Because, yeah, there are different thresholds for homeowners and non-homeowners. But for a non-homeowner, the threshold's currently around $350,000, increasing to $450,000 come 1 January.
So, Michael, what's the value of your super at the moment?
Around about $300,000.
Okay, so you're going to be under that threshold, so... on that alone, you should be looking at a full-age pension.
Okay, I'm 66 at this stage. I'm still working.
Mm-hmm.
But so as from the 1st of January, that will go up to 450, is it?
That's right.
Mm.
So the...
right. Okay, one last question, sorry.
Yep.
I'm putting in a lot of my money, my wages, into the pension.
Into your super fund, you mean?
Into the super.
Yep.
I was able to put in up to $35,000. Is that going to change?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, that one's changing from 1 July next year. So currently that $35,000 limit, but reducing to $25,000 come 1 July.
Mm.
Yeah, someone told me because of my, I'm over that age bracket, that it would not affect me, but you say it will?
Yeah, yeah. Look, it is for all... for everyone, it's coming down to $25,000, Michael. So,
I mean, it hasn't passed through it's Parliament not, yet.
But it looks highly likely that it will.
Well, I heard talk that I think there's not many that many sessions of Parliament prior to Christmas, so that they'll probably get it tabled or something like that, but it may not actually be voted on. So then we have this period of limbo into next year. Everybody's talking as if it will go through as planned, which means the threshold comes down to $25,000. So what we're talking about there are contributions, I guess, going in from your employer. So that includes the 9.5% that has to be paid, the super guarantee.
Plus your salary sacrifice.
Yeah. Plus your salary sacrifice. Or for self-employed people, it includes any, well, they're called concessional contributions, which are personal contributions that you claim a tax deduction for.
Mm. So right up until July next year, Michael, you can continue to go up to the $35,000 mark, but then, yeah, from that point on, you're going to have to drop it back to 25, or otherwise you'll pay some more tax on those contributions.
All right, Michael, I'm sure that helps. Thank you for the call, 131873. If you have a call out there that you want answered from Philip or Paul. What about the transition to retirement pensions? A number of people, of course, have taken those out. Mm. They're probably concerned now with all of this talk of the changes going on that maybe after the 1st of July next year, these aren't the best tool to have. What are your thoughts on the transition to retirement pensions?
Well, just to reconfirm what the changes are. Mm. So from 1 July, well, currently, somebody that starts a transition to retirement pension, the money that they had in super was being taxed at 15% on its earnings. When you start a pension up, though, the tax rate goes to zero. So that's really nice. From July next year, though, they're proposing not to give you that tax-free status. So it just keep being taxed on your earnings at that 15% rate, just like your super currently is. So then you ask the question, well, why would I bother starting one up? And there are reasons. So a lot of people out there, it would make a lot of sense if they were able to do some salary sacrifice, mm-hmm. because they then only pay 15% tax on that money. But they often don't have enough left over to be able to afford to do that.
Mm.
So by starting a transition to retirement pension, it might give you a little bit of extra cash so that you can then afford to do salary sacrifice. And your net position is you're no worse off. You're getting the same income coming in, mm. but you're saving some tax in the process.
Look, the area where it's you need to really revise the numbers is for people between 55 and 60, because that's where there's always going to be more tax paid on the income that's coming out of your super fund through the transition pension. So it's important to review those numbers with your advisor. But certainly if you're over 60 and you're currently salary sacrificing and you've got one of these pensions in place, then it's highly likely that it's going to be worthwhile to continue it, because the money that you're drawing out from the pension will continue to be tax-free. Like Philip said, the tax-free earnings will disappear on those transition pensions, but that loss of tax still might be, you know, less than the benefit you're getting from continuing with your salary sacrificing, and also topping up your income with the extra money that you're drawing out of the super fund.
But very simply, anyone still working who doesn't need the additional income, there's no benefit to starting up the transition to retirement pension any longer.
Okay, 131873. Hello, Noel.
Yeah, hello.
Yes.
I'm with a super fund. I won't mention it at the moment unless you want to know.
No, keep going.
I'm over 70.
Got it.
Yep.
And my funeral thing finishes at 70 years of age.
Do you mean your insurance, Noel, or your life insurance? Yep.
Yep, that's finished. So I asked for my money.
Yep.
And after 2.5 months, I haven't got it.
Right. So you've actually...
What do I do?
Have you submitted a signed withdrawal form, have you?
Yes, I did all that, and then they said... I rang and I got a... how do you put it? Not an Australian voice on the phone.
Right.
Then I ran 4 weeks later, and I got an Australian voice on the phone, and they said, oh, you didn't get the green form.
Yeah, right.
We've had that problem before.
Yeah.
So they've sent that a fortnight ago. I filled it out straight away, sent it away, and still have heard nothing. So after 2.5-3 months, and I'm talking about an amount of money under $5,000, and they haven't paid up. What do I do?
Come talk to us. We'll help you get the form in correctly. I mean, they often hold it up for reasons like you didn't attach certified ID, or, you know, they don't have your signature on file, so they need to confirm that. And, yeah, they just drag the chain.
Yeah, what I'm worried about, I have enough money for my funeral, but if I had died, my family wouldn't have that money.
Well, they'd still get it. I mean, you should have a beneficiary nominated, but
yeah, I've done all that.
It'd be a lot.
All that. I mean, that's shocking to me.
Oh, it is.
Imagine if it was hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Mm. No, it's not good. No, you should be able to access that money pretty quickly, in fact. And it sounds
what
like
money is it that he's after?
Just $5,000 in his super.
Oh, yeah. Super, isn't it?
Yeah. But I mean, in our office, we start jumping up and down if we haven't seen it after 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So if it's taken 2.5 months, you're well past that. There are actually guidelines where super funds have to adhere to certain timeframes, and if they exceed it, well, then you would be within your rights to go to the financial ombudsman service, and then they would step in. But then that just delays the process too. If you can deal with the super fund directly, that's a much better way.
All right. If Noel needs to get in touch with you, what's the number?
Yeah, it's 02 Sydney number, Noel, 92587500. 92587500.
All right, we'll give that out again shortly. We'll take a break, back with more in a moment. 131873. Thank you for your company. You're talking all things financial, really, in this first hour. Philip Tafe and Paul Larkin from IT Financial Services here offering their services. 131873 is the open line number. Back to calls in just one moment. But all the talk over the last week, fellas, really financially, has been about avocados in some strange sort of way, hasn't it? I mean, how many smashed avocado breakfasts, I think Bernard Salt was writing, should, you know, Gen Yers stop eating so they can save to buy a home? But some stats came out suggesting that, if you wanted to get a 10% deposit on a home, an average property in Sydney, you would need to put aside 22% of your income after tax. But of course, if you want to avoid all of those extra bank levies and securities and whatever, you need a 20% deposit, which means you need almost 44-45%.
Yep.
No one can do that.
Not unless you're living at home with mum and dad for the next 20 years. It's very, very difficult. And you know, if you're not earning sufficient income to be putting those sort of numbers away, yeah, it's extremely difficult. And, you know, I don't know where it's going to end. I mean, it's...
Well, people seem to be going down the pecking order. You know, it would have been great to buy my own home, the dream home, straight away.
Mm.
Then they're going down to saying, oh, well, maybe I'll buy it as an investment property. And now we're starting to see people saying, well, I can't even afford that. Why don't I use my super and just try and buy some kind of property in there?
That's when your alarm bells go off, right?
Exactly. You're really getting down to, I'm just desperate to have a property somewhere, so I'll do it any way I can, even if it's not the right decision.
Yeah, $3 million for a bachelor pad with one toilet and a fold-down sink sounds like a bargain these days. Yeah, I'll snap that up.
Story today, our office.
It's insane.
Our office at Goldfields House, you know, is being demolished and we have to be out of there at the end of the year. And I believe all the apartments, because it's going to be residential tower, were pre-sold in China.
Won't be sold here.
You know, and they're $14 million apartments. Yeah. I can't imagine that's your typical Sydney-sider buying that to live
in. It's not your first home buyers from out in the burbs.
Doesn't sound like it.
Not even with the bank of mum and dad.
Well, I've heard a stat the other day that Sydney has, in the last 4 to 5 years, has gone up 65%.
Yep.
Melbourne 45 or something.
That's right.
So,
and wages have gone up about 2%.
Well, yeah. I mean, you're looking somewhere in
0.4% at the moment, isn't it? Wages growth, they're basically flat.
Something like that, yeah.
Flat. Yeah.
So it's, yeah, the process is just crazy.
Yep. 131873. That's why we've got you guys. You're the money experts. Hello, Maria.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm a war widow, and I presently have my assets in investments and that of $465,320. And, will that be affected at all?
And Maria, do you own your own home?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so you won't really be affected. I mean, the rules as they stood, you already come under the whatever the assets thresholds are, and so you'll just go onto the new system. So for a single homeowner, people that are worse off, I'm just having a look at the thresholds. I think it's where you've got less than around...
If you've got more than
about 550,000, you're worse off.
Yeah, so Maria, you should be fine, actually, in terms of, any changes. Well, we did mention earlier that the reduction rate actually is increasing. So it's actually, the when you're over the lower threshold, the reduction is going from $1.50 to $3 for every $1,000 you have over the lower amount. So look, you actually may lose a bit of pension. But look,
they can't reduce my war widow's pension, but the ISS supplement could be reduced.
Yeah, so that again, that threshold.
And the war widow's pension can't be affected.
Actually, no, you're right. You're right there. So
don't have your ISS.
Yeah. Okay.
But how about the energy support pension that we get? That's $14.20.
No, the supplement should remain, but the other payment that is impacted, where people are worse off, is where you've got more than about $290,000 in assets. So that could be impacted.
How much more than how much?
290.
I've got four.
So Marie's got 448, was it?
465,320.
That's right.
So I'm over the threshold then, aren't I?
Well, you're over the lower threshold, so that's what I was mentioning, Maria. There's likely, that, well, it could be a reduction. But look, why don't you give us a call in the office the next day or two, and we can help you review the numbers a bit more closely.
What is your number?
Our office number is 029258.
029258.
No, 9258.
029258.
Mm-hmm. Yep, 7500.
7500.
Do you want to just repeat that again, Paul?
Yeah, so it's
029258750.
That's it. Spot on. That's it.
Did it better than we could.
Thanks, Maria. Give us a ring and we can look at it more closely for you.
Thank you very much.
No problem. Maria. Thanks for the call. Hello, John.
How are you, boys?
We're good.
I've got a question for the boys. Now, I draw a superannuation pension from my working life, okay? Now, on top of that, when it happens, I do casual work for government departments.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you have to have be a member of a superannuation fund where we're paid 9 or 10%. Now, see, they're only small amounts and everything else, but it does add up. Can I draw on this second super fund without me having to close it down again, and every time there's an election, census, or whatever, I have to start a new fund because I don't want to see it becoming dead money?
How old are you, John?
61.
Okay, so if you're under 65 and you're working, then the short answer is no, you can't take it out as a lump sum.
No, I'm not working. I'm a retired teacher.
Didn't you say you're doing a bit...
A bit here, a bit there, government work helps with the census or the agency or something.
The rule is if you're working less than, say, 10 hours a week, you're deemed to be permanently retired. So in that case, whatever's in your super fund, you could pull it out whenever you want. You just submit a withdrawal form through to the super fund and declare that it's your intention to be permanently retired.
I am permanently retired. It's just that, as I say, every time there's an election, census or whatever, I get the casual salary and everything else, what the contract is.
You throw your hat back in the ring, hey, John.
Beg your pardon?
You throw your hat back in the ring, you get back out there and do a little bit.
Yeah.
So when you're saying 10 hours a week, is that averaged across a year or in just specific time periods? I mean, say John does a fortnight over an election or something like that and does, 50 hours over a week and then 50 hours another week.
There'll be some averaging. But for John, his point is that, maybe he's had $100 put into that super fund, and if he just leaves it there, it's going to get eaten up in fees or whatever else. Because normally I would say to you...
About $1,000 there.
Yeah, and normally the super fund would say you've got to leave about $1,000 in there just to keep the account open or something like that. So, unfortunately, you might get to this situation where, you need to close the fund constantly or once a year, get it all out, and then reopen a new one when you start doing the new work.
Mm. That's a bit of a pest.
Yeah, it's a bit
painful. A pest. The only alternative is to leave it in there and hopefully invest it in something that earns more than the fees being taken out.
It's a good question, John. Haven't heard that one before. Thank you, mate. 131873 is the number. Hello, Vicky.
Oh, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
That's all right.
My call is about my 28-year-old son fell in love with an Irish girl and he's been in Ireland for 3 years.
Right.
He has about $60,000 in super and he's left it up to mum to open the mail.
Steal it. Steal it, Vicky. He won't know.
Is there anything he can do to protect it? It seems to be, it's not whittling away quickly, but obviously fees come out every year.
Yeah.
He has no intention of coming back. Should he have a plan for this $60,000 or do I just leave it sitting there in his super fund and it's it's in from when he did his apprenticeship with Fairfax newspapers years ago, actually. That's where it's sitting.
Yeah, right.
It shouldn't just whittle away, Vicky.
Yeah, Vicky, as long as it's invested, you know, quite well, if it's in a balanced type arrangement, look, it shouldn't whittle away unless it's sitting in just a cash vanilla option and the fees are going to eat into it more because it won't be earning much at all. But, look, I would check out, I mean, on the statements it should show how the funds are invested, whether it's a balanced option or some sort of growth option. I imagine because your son's younger, if he didn't make a choice when he started working, like with the super fund investment, when he started working with Fairfax, he would have gone into a default option, and those default options are normally a growth type option. So that would mean that, you know, I mean, in the current climate, the returns probably haven't been fantastic the last 12 months or so, but look, over the last 5 to 7 years, they wouldn't have been too bad, you know, somewhere around 6 to 8% sort of type returns. So the fees themselves, obviously, yeah, they still need to be paid, but, yeah, look, maintaining it in that sort of investment option, you know, that should be suitable.
And the other thing, Vicky, is...
Just leave it. Sorry, go on.
Oh, if he's intending to stay overseas forever, I'd have to brush up on these rules to see whether there's any portability option for him or to get access to it, given that he's not planning on coming back. And to be honest, I don't know the rules going across to Ireland, and I'd have to check that for you.
Mm.
Rightio. Okie doke. So I shouldn't really panic and just let it sit there where it is.
Oh, no. Yeah, don't panic. I mean, it can stay here for, you know, a very long period whilst he's over there. But, yeah, like Philip said, he may be able to move it over to the Ireland scheme if he really wants to. But
if not, we'd have to check out. I would just get some advice, as you probably do yourself, to say, you know, he's young, he's got this pot of gold sitting there, how do we invest it? And you should be able to invest it in some kind of share portfolio that does really well over the years.
Mm. All right, Vicky, thank you. We'll take a break and back with more. Busy, busy, busy. 131873 is the number. Pam is in Brisbane. Hello, Pam.
Hi, how are you?
We're very well, thank you.
That's good. My question is it best to put, if you've got salary sacrifice for your super, is it best to put it into the, put some money into your super, or is it best to pay off your mortgage?
Yeah, Pam, look, it's a very good question. Look, in this scenario, look, running some numbers is the most important thing to do. Look, look, at a high level, I'd suggest that it's probably a combination to be doing some salary sacrificing and continuing to pay down that mortgage if you can.
The benefits are, let's say you're in the, I don't know, 34% tax bracket, and by salary sacrificing you only pay 15% tax, you could be saving 19%.
Mm.
That's many years worth of interest payments on your loan to do better. So the salary sacrifice leaves you way ahead. But you've got to weigh it up. Is it affordable? How long before you can access the super? So what's your age and those kinds of things? So I guess that's the kind of planning that we'd be doing in a lot more detail before we gave you a definitive answer on what's correct for you.
Yeah, and it also depends, Pam, on what your super fund is actually returning to. That comes into play as well. So if it's returning an amount greater than what your mortgage interest rate is, then it can be quite effective to actually be putting more in via salary sacrificing. So, yeah, like Philip said, it's a case of sitting down and actually doing some proper planning on it.
Pam, hope that helped. Thank you. We might have time for just one more here. Hi, George.
Michael?
Yes, George?
I've been listening to your friends for a long time.
Yes.
Can you do me a favour? I need somebody to separate between an asset and a cash asset in the bank. I'm doing my form for my mother to update her asset and income test. Nobody explains to me what's the difference between an asset value, which is $250,000 by the federal government 1st of July.
Yeah.
No mention of cash asset in the bank.
Okay, well,
George, there's no difference. Cash is included within that asset limit that we're talking about. So that asset limit includes cash, superannuation.
Money in shares, anything.
Home contents.
Yeah. Investment properties.
Investment properties. Yeah. It's all encompassing.
Okay, so no difference between cash as an asset outside of the family home and all the other things.
Correct.
All right. George, I think that does explain it rather clearly. I hope it does. Thank you. Apologies that I have to cut it there because we are about to crash into the news. For the callers waiting on, I apologise, but the team will be back next week, same time next week, to answer more financial questions. So if the question stays in mind, call us then.
We'll be here.
Get in early.
We'll be here.
In fact, when both of you will be back.
Yeah.
Yeah, the dream team is back.
We're back.
As they say, when you're on a good thing, you stick to it.
That's it.
And we'll see you both next week. Absolutely. Same place, same time.
Thanks, Michael.
Okay, Bye-bye. We'll be back after the news with the open line part of the program, all 4.5 hours of it. 131873 is the open line number if you would like to take part in that.